却看我却看，来过山我却看，
我却看，
我是为了人，来过山我却看，我却看，来过山我却看，我留看。
来过山我却看，我却看。
来过山我却看，我留看。
It's Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet doing Soundgarden's Black Hole Sun here on the Viva La Mach radio program.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
You are listening to an encore presentation of the Viva La Mach radio program. My name is Paul. I am the Mochster. It is WRCT Pittsburgh. I want to let you know that you can hear my program each and every Friday night in its original run, live and in person. But occasionally here on WRCT, we like to play some encore presentations, and that's what this is. Most of this next 2 hours originally aired on February 4th, 2022. I say most because, you know what, I'm going to throw in probably about 20 minutes of new content that wasn't aired Friday, February 4th, 2022. So let's get into this encore presentation of Viva La Mach right after this message.
Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
I should tell you, you are listening to 88.3 FM, WRCT Pittsburgh. It's a little show we like to call Viva La Mach. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Paul. I am the Mochster. You can reach me. You can reach me through the emails at wrctrequest@gmail.com. That is my digital address. My rockin' attorney keeps telling me, you got to get on the Instas, dude. And I'm not really sure what that means. But speaking of my rockin' attorney, I should remind you that you should join him. His name's Eric Jackson Lurie, and he does 2.5 hours of rock and roll, country, and soul with a show called Courts in Session. It focuses on new music by your favorite classic artists. Happens each and every Thursday at 8. Now, to check the schedule, make sure his encore is still Monday. I think it might be Monday at noon still, in case you missed the Thursday. And speaking of Jerry's Records, while I'm thinking about that, speaking of Jerry's Records, which I have been doing with the upcoming Jerry's Record Mock. If you tune in on Monday, you will hear him. He did an exclusive interview with Jerry a few years ago, and he dug that out of the archives. And it's fun to hear because Jerry was a very loyal supporter of WRCT. How about some Dire Straits? Why not? Let's just make it happen. It's the Viva La Mach radio program. Skate away.
Hallelujah. Here she comes. Queen Rollerball. And on Shantae, can I say? Care I? Oh. DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
We're going to start today with something that I know some in my audience don't really want to accept. But when we deny an empirical reality, we're really all the worse off. There's no advantage to denying an empirical reality. And the empirical reality is that Joe Biden's approval rating is not good. And it's actually getting down to where Donald Trump was at this point in his presidency. And we're going to talk about why. We'll talk about the implications and we'll talk about what could be done to reverse it. But it is now very clear that Joe Biden has a political problem on his hands. And as a result, Democrats have a political problem on their hands. In terms of the numbers, Joe Biden's approval has dropped below 40% for the first time in his presidency, according to the Real Clear Politics average of polls. Now, what Real Clear Politics does is it takes a number of different polls individually, some of which might have a bias. Like, for example, it includes the Rasmussen poll, which can have sort of a right wing bias. It includes the IBD tip poll, which some say has a bit of a left wing bias, et cetera. And you get an average. And yesterday, that average dropped for the first time below 40 to 39.8. And today has recovered just a sliver to exactly 40. And as you can see, if you're watching, that's the lowest that it has been since the start of Joe Biden's presidency. And if we ask the question, well, it's common that sometimes presidents come into office with a higher approval and then it sort of declines over time. How does it compare to past presidents? And 538 does that for us. And what you see when you look is that Joe Biden came into office with a significantly higher approval than Donald Trump, about 10 points higher. And that has slowly gone down, down, down to where they are now almost identical at this point in their presidencies. Biden and Trump are now basically equal in terms of approval. Joe Biden's approval is well below where Barack Obama's was at this point in his presidency. It, because of 9/11, is dramatically below where George W. Bush's was, although George W. Bush did ultimately squander the high approval that came in the aftermath of 9/11. Joe Biden's approval, although for a period of time was higher than Bill Clinton's at this point in his presidency, it has now dropped below. Biden's approval is well below where George H.W. Bush's was. It is below where Ronald Reagan's was. And if we want to go back further, it is also below where Jimmy Carter's was. Similar to Gerald Ford, well below Richard Nixon. And, you know, we could go back further and it's a different era. If you go back to LBJ, Kennedy and Eisenhower, it's a completely different political era altogether. I don't know how much we get from looking at those numbers. But the point here is Joe Biden does have a political problem on his hands. Now, why is Joe Biden's approval so low? It's a combination of things. First and foremost, it has been some time since Joe Biden has had what we might consider a major accomplishment. Relatively early on, Joe Biden had the COVID stimulus package. Shortly after that, there was the dramatic rollout of the accelerated rollout of COVID vaccines. But then Joe Biden got hit with the Delta variant. Then Joe Biden left Afghanistan, which I believe is 110% the right decision. But the right was able to weaponize it pretty successfully in terms of saying it was chaotic and misplanned and it's all the things that it would have been under Trump as well. But that hurt Joe Biden. Infrastructure was done, but it got relatively little coverage. And then now there's sort of this lull. And so I think there's a couple different questions that we could ask. One, in a vacuum, what could Joe Biden do to raise his approval in the short term? I did a TikTok clip about this by popular demand. And there's a few different things that Joe Biden could do in the short term, although I don't know how much they would benefit him long term. You know, we've talked about the student loan forgiveness. There is no doubt that doing some student loan forgiveness would help Joe Biden's approval rating in the immediate. But would it really help him? And would it help Democrats longer term? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure. Something on decriminalizing marijuana federally, I think, would be very popular. But could he get it done is a sort of a real question. What about announcing that the pandemic is over? And this question, which just 3 days ago was sort of like, yeah, maybe, it is very clear that due to political pressure and, quite frankly, fatigue with the pandemic, numerous states are now saying we're getting rid of masks. We're getting rid of masks in schools. We're getting rid of, in some cases, requirements for vaccination to go to certain types of businesses. And my expectation is that for political reasons, between now and March 1st, which is the date of the next State of the Union that Joe Biden is going to give, I expect it could be next week. It could be on the day of the State of the Union. Sometime between now and March 1st, I expect the Biden White House to come out and say, we are now at the point where life can really start going back to normal. Now, there's divergent views, as I talked to you about yesterday, as to whether that is a scientifically and medically sound thing to do. Some say there's really no more milestones to wait for. If we don't get a more deadly variant, it's sort of going to be like this for the next however many years. There's really nothing else to wait for. It's time to go back to, quote, normal and let people make decisions for themselves about their level of risk. The counterpoint to that is, nah, there's still a lot of people dying as a result of the surge that started a couple months ago. It is not the time to do it. I think that there is significant leaning right now within the Biden White House to sometime between now and March 1st, take a sort of mission accomplished approach, make a mission accomplished type statement. When it comes to COVID, whether it will end up being the right thing or not, I don't know. But Joe Biden does have a political problem on his hands. And these are some of the things, certainly, that when it comes to COVID are being considered. And very quickly, because we're basically 8.5 months from the midterms, what happens in the next 6 weeks is going to set the tone for what the midterm races are going to look like in terms of what Republicans will use to run against Democrats. The culture stuff, for sure. But what else are they going to use? And there's this limited window now to set the tone for that, for what that's going to be. And of course, we'll be following what it is. I want to do a very important follow up. When comedian Bob Saget unexpectedly suddenly died not long ago, I and many others predicted there are anti-vax people who are going to say this is because of the vaccine. Now, of course, there was no evidence of that. And there's no evidence vaccines are killing people. It's important to say. But it was a very accurate prediction. And Candace Owens was one of the people who made that prediction. And it was disgusting and it was irresponsible. We now have learned the cause of death of Bob Saget's tragic death. And it is head trauma, per his own family. CNN reporting, Bob Saget, who was found dead in his Orlando, Florida hotel room last month, died from the result of a head trauma. Quote, the authorities have determined Bob passed from head trauma. They concluded he accidentally hit the back of his head on something, thought nothing of it, and went to sleep. No drugs or alcohol were involved. Now, completely irresponsibly, as many of you will remember, prominent right winger Candace Owens and others made statements like the following. And now, I mean, there was no evidence for it at the time. Now we actually have a cause of death. Think about how disgusting this is, particularly if you are Bob Saget's family.
So, am I a conspiracy theorist or am I Nostradamus? The answer is neither. I'm just not on Big Pharma's payroll and I refuse to peddle in their lies. And so to that end, today, I'm going to point out another truth, and it will likely be deemed a conspiracy theory until it's not. There are too many healthy individuals like Bob Saget, who we know have received their vaccinations, who are dropping dead suddenly and unexpectedly with no further explanation. Healthy athletes, young students in their physical prime, the majority of them males, dropping suddenly and unexpectedly in the middle of games from heart issues.
Now, as I told you at the time, it is not that rare. I mean, you know, statistically, these things are rare, but they happen. And I remember growing up and I remember when the basketball player Reggie Lewis died suddenly. And at that point, there was no hammer called anti-vax. So the Reggie Lewis death was not considered a nail with which you could hit with that anti-vax hammer. Now they have this hammer and they want to use it on everything.
What we know for a fact is that these people are being mandated to take the vaccine. And we know for a fact that these vaccines come with a warning that they bring about myocarditis.
Now, as you guys know, there are, at last check, three instances of myocarditis that have resulted in death in the United States related to the vaccines. And almost every instance of myocarditis resolves quickly and without incident, and it is in and of itself rare, and the risk of getting myocarditis from COVID is higher than getting it from the vaccine. But remember, if you've got this huge hammer and you've invested a lot of money in it, you're going to be saying everything is a nail.
The media is once again gaslighting the public, pretending that to even take notice of this very alarming trend is a conspiracy.
Well, it is. It is completely without evidence. And as far as Bob Saget is now concerned, it is not the case. And it was disgusting when she said it. It continues to be disgusting. And they're not planning on stopping. And that's the thing. You have to be ready. When they start with this stuff, we really need to be ready to say, what evidence do you have that that is what took place here? And of course, she had none, and there is none. Bob Saget tragically dying from a head trauma. And it's just gross that people like Candace Owens are able to monetize and weaponize this incredible disinformation. And she has a big following. She's well funded and has a big following. And a lot of people hear this stuff and they just accept it. Let me know your thoughts. Find me on Twitter at @DPacman. We'll be right back. There's an interesting new piece to the Joe Rogan vaccine COVID controversy that I want to talk about. And it's sort of a common endpoint that often takes place when someone makes a bunch of statements or allows statements to be made. And those statements are then scrutinized, and it turns out, wow, these statements are inaccurate, they're potentially dangerous, etc. There's this common refrain, which is some version of, nobody should really be listening to me about this topic anyway. And that's where Joe Rogan has reportedly landed, saying taking advice from him on vaccines isn't a smart thing to do. And while it might be funny, and it's certainly true, a lot of the problem comes from this sort of like moral hazard type scenario, although moral hazard is not the exact word for it, but some will know what I mean, where those who need to be told that it's not smart to take their advice on X are people not smart enough to realize that. And that's really sort of what's at issue here. So let me back up a little bit and remind you guys, a podcaster and comedian, Joe Rogan, has been over the last 3 weeks or so, been under heavy fire for two different sets of reasons. One comes with regard to COVID and vaccine disinformation perpetuated by some of Joe Rogan's guests, with no disclaimers that what the guests are saying runs counter not only to the medical science consensus, but to the empirical realities of medical science. Some such claims have also been made by Rogan himself, and this led to one controversy wherein Neil Young and Joni Mitchell and others pulled their content from Spotify in protest. Spotify, the kind of main platform for Joe Rogan's podcast. Separately, but relatedly, there has also been significant backlash against Joe Rogan for numerous uses of the N-word on his program over the last decade, jokes and laughing related to sexual harassment and sexual assault. And so that's another problem. Today, we're focusing on the vaccine piece. And there's a new report from Mediaite, which says Joe Rogan says people who take the vaccine, take vaccine advice from him are not smart. Joe Rogan made his way back to the stand-up stage Tuesday night and addressed the Spotify controversies. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Rogan headlined a small show in Austin, Texas at the Vulcan Gas Company and talked about the controversies. Speaking about the N-word, he said, "I used to say it if I was talking about a Richard Pryor bit or something, I would say it in context. Somebody made a compilation of every time I said it over 14 years, and they put it on YouTube, and it turned out that was racist as F, even to me. I'm me, and I'm watching it saying, stop saying it. I put my cursor over the video, and I'm like, 4 more minutes. I haven't used that word in years, but it's kind of weird. People will get really mad if you use that word and tweet about it on a phone that's made by slaves. Rogan then tackled the other controversy, the anti-vax. He says, I talk S for a living. That's why this is so baffling. If you're taking vaccine advice from me, is that really my fault? What dumb S were you about to do when my stupid idea sounded better? You know that dude who made people eat animal penises on TV? How does he feel about medicine? If you want my advice, don't take my advice. Rogan previously said dozens of celebrities contacted him for COVID advice, including Aaron Rodgers and UFC president Dana White. So this is the exact problem, guys. The problem is people are not smart enough to realize that they should not be taking his vaccine advice. The people we're worried about is the point. And that's why it's so concerning, right? If Joe Rogan was only giving vaccine advice to informed people, it would essentially have no detrimental effect. You'll be like, yeah, okay, nobody's taking that seriously. He's also, by the way, kind of calling his audience dumb, which is interesting. They may not realize that that's what he's doing. I don't know. But this whole like, come on, guys, who would believe me? It's a very common kind of face saving tactic for people pushing these narratives. But at the end of the day, it's really an insult to his audience. You guys aren't so stupid you would listen to me, right? And unfortunately, the answer is yes, a lot of them are. A lot of them are. And it's evidenced by the fact that Dana White is coming to Rogan for advice. Aaron Rodgers said on other podcasts, when I got COVID, I talked to Joe Rogan. And there's this entire echo chamber that reinforces the idea that you would go to him. I think it was there's this right wing Trump supporting podcaster named Tim Pool, who I guess said, you know, he used to be on the left, I guess, or something like that. And when Tim Pool got COVID, he said he called Rogan. So it's not, you know, it's not only that Rogan needs to let the audience know, I guess, it's not you're not smart if you listen to me on this. There's other people who are then saying, I'm also going to Rogan for advice on this stuff. And that's why it's so concerning. Now, the fallback of saying your audience is stupid for listening to you, it's interesting for sure. I'm not sure what it suggests about what Joe Rogan thinks about his own audience. Because if Joe Rogan is saying it's not smart to take advice from me, he must know lots of people are doing it. What does he think about his audience, which is an interesting question as well. But this is sometimes, you know, it's a version of when Fox News gets sued for the things that Tucker Carlson says on his show. The lawyers for Fox say Carlson is an entertainer who engages in hyperbole. He's not saying things that should be taken as fact. He's not a reporter. But the whole shtick with Fox is report opinions and frame and package this stuff as if it is someone telling you these are facts. But when it comes to the legal defense, that's what they go to. Alex Jones. We know that Alex Jones' own lawyer or lawyers, when he has been sued, say this is an entertainer. He's doing a character here. The things he says are in character. It's almost like they liken it to, you know, when Rufus Sewell plays a Nazi in Man in the High Castle, that's not what Rufus Sewell believes. It's his character. And like we all get it when we're watching Man in the High Castle, but it's deliberately obfuscated when it's Tucker Carlson or when it's Alex Jones. And Joe Rogan's using a different version of that. He's not saying I'm playing a character. He's just saying it should be obvious that it's not smart to listen to me about this stuff. But it's not obvious to the very people who are actually going to listen and say, oh, ivermectin or no vaccines or whatever the case may be. So a common refrain that often kind of comes at the end of these controversies. And it seems that that's sort of where Joe Rogan has landed. This next story is completely unbelievable. Do you guys remember when Donald Trump would talk during his campaign about how people are flushing toilets 10 to 15 times?
People are flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times.
And we were wondering what on earth is going on with Trump and toilets that he's so obsessed with needing to flush 10 to 15 times. We have now figured it out, and it is unbelievable. New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman writes in her forthcoming book that Trump's White House toilet would be clogged with documents that Donald Trump was flushing down the toilet. Is this the explanation? Is this the explanation? Axios reports, while President Trump was in office, staff at the White House residence, Trump was doing this with his personal toilet, periodically would discover wads of printed paper clogging a toilet and believed that the president had flushed pieces of paper. Maggie Haberman scoops in her forthcoming book, Confidence Man. This adds a vivid new dimension to Trump's lapses in preserving government documents. Haberman reports Trump has told people that since leaving office, he has remained in contact with Kim Jong-un, whose love letters, as Trump once called them, were among documents the National Archives retrieved from Mar-a-Lago. The news of White House toilet flushing comes as the National Archives has asked the Biden Justice Department to examine Trump's handling of White House records. So let's go back. Remember this bizarre viral rant from Trump about elements of bathrooms and 10 to 15 flushes?
We have a situation where we're looking very strongly at sinks and showers and other elements of bathrooms where you turn the faucet on in areas where there's tremendous amounts of water, where the water rushes out to sea because you could never handle it, and you don't get any water. You turn on the faucet, you don't get any water. They take a shower and water comes dripping out. It's dripping out, very quietly dripping out. People are flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times.
It's so insane because people have been sanctioned for far less document destruction than what Trump did. So like there's a very real story here, guys, which is Trump ran on Hillary can't be trusted with documents, with information. She can't private email, all this different stuff. And meanwhile, Trump is eating documents, according to Omarosa Manigo Newman. Trump is ripping up documents, which then have to be taped back together. Trump's family is using private email for government business. Trump takes documents to Mar-a-Lago, which is subsequently taken back by the National Archives. And Trump is sitting there flushing the toilet to flush documents down the toilet. So when Trump says people are flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times, what he means is I'm doing it. I am just flushing wads of documents down the toilet and I'm needing to. He's really exercising the valves by flushing again and again and again. If you wrote this into a movie, it would be like it's too much of a caricature. No one would possibly believe the president is literally flushing documents down the White House toilet, clogging it, and then having to get staff to unclog the toilet from the documents. It's unbelievable. Now, on the serious piece of this, at what point is it time to actually look at charges for some of this document-related stuff? Sandy Berger was a political consultant, was the U.S. National Security Advisor for Bill Clinton for a roughly four-year period, okay? He removed four documents, and Sandy Berger was fined $50,000, sentenced to 2 years probation, had to do 100 hours of community service, and lost his security clearance for 3 years. Ultimately gave up his license to practice law. Okay. Four documents that Sandy Berger inappropriately took with him. And, you know, the intent may not even have been nearly as pernicious as what it seems that and insidious as what Donald Trump is trying to do here. Trump's flushing documents down the toilet, eating them and ripping them up and taking them to Mar-a-Lago. And it's not just Trump. There are other people that were involved in improper handling of records or private email, all of this different stuff. At what point is it time to say there have to be some consequences here? We'll have the clip of Trump talking about flushing toilets 10 to 15 times on our Instagram. If you're just listening today, find us on Instagram at David Pakman Show. Today, we're going to be speaking with Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, who represents the 8th District of Illinois. That's the Western Chicago suburbs. He's chairman of the House Oversight Committee on Economic and Consumer Policy, also a member of the very important House Intelligence Committee. Congressman, it's great to have you on today.
Hey, thank you so much, David. Same here.
So, OK, I mean, to start, we spoke today about, for the first time in his presidency in the Real Clear Politics average, Joe Biden's approval has dipped just slightly below 40%. It's not great. It's lower than at this point, even where Donald Trump was at this point in his presidency. And that was not good. I attribute this to sort of a lull in what we might call major accomplishments to point to. What do you think is driving these numbers, and what would you like to see the Biden administration do?
Well, I think that COVID, inflation, and probably the lack of progress on certain initiatives in Congress contribute to this. But obviously, as you know, elections are about choices. And I think that we're going to have some stark choices in the fall. But before then, we absolutely have to do better in Congress, but also hopefully we can see COVID decline and inflation come under some control.
Do you, as an individual who's up for reelection every 2 years, do you worry when the president's approval is low that it will affect your reelection?
Well, I think that the president's standing definitely affects how different elected officials and Democrats kind of fare because of the environment that the president's standing will influence. But I think at the end of the day, you know, voters also try to balance local concerns and how they perceive their local elected officials' performance based on their own experiences, for instance, to assess, you know, whether to support that person. And so I think the same will be true in this election. All that being said, we need to make sure that the president's successful. When he's successful, everyone's successful. But to do that, we have to make sure that we deliver for the American people and address their, you know, everyday concerns right now.
When it comes to something like the Russia-Ukraine situation, I mean, I think that bad faith actors will criticize the president and Democrats no matter what is done, either as being weak or too strong or not being friendly enough or, you know, whatever the case may be. Bad faith actors will have their criticisms. But what would you like to see the role of the Biden administration in the United States on the basis of what happens there in the next few months?
Well, actually, I think that the Biden administration has done a tremendous job of pulling together our allies onto the same page with regard to aggression on Ukrainian borders. I think that what we need to see at this point is more multilateral coordination with regard to what the costs Russia would face were to invade Ukraine. And that means agreeing on a very strong sanctions regime, agreeing on what we would do to support Ukraine if it is invaded. And of course, you know, what do we do to give Russia an off-ramp with regard to the current crisis? If we can do those three things energetically and in a coordinated fashion, I think that hopefully we'll get to a better place. But right now, obviously, is a very dangerous moment.
What does your gut tell you? And, you know, you're on the House Intelligence Committee, but so your gut and what intelligence you've been presented, there may be some gray area there. But what does your gut tell you about the real objective here of Putin? Is this to suss out how people will react without a real plan to invade?
It's very interesting, and I had the privilege of attending a classified briefing with CIA Director Bill Burns, who's a tremendous public servant, by the way. We had this two-hour conversation on Monday, and without getting into classified details, I think that what I can say for sure is that Putin has a very emotional connection to Ukraine in the sense that it's almost like a maniacal obsession with making sure Ukraine does not further kind of drift into the Western orbit. Interestingly, all of his actions since 2014, the invasion of Crimea, the the presence of Russians in the Donbass have further pushed Ukrainians into the embrace of Western countries. The second observation I have is that I do think that Putin, if he's just operating as a rational actor and setting aside his maniacal kind of personal obsession with Ukraine, knows that all things being equal, he doesn't want to have a situation where he invades and then has another Afghanistan on his hands, just as the Soviet Union did 30 years ago. And I think that because of that, I do think that there will be a search for diplomatic options that allow him to save face, even at the same time that he, you know, kind of rattles the sabers. My hope is that his head prevails over his heart, and that we can kind of convince or persuade him that the costs would just be prohibitive for him. And, you know, at the end of the day, he might want to have on his tombstone that he was the one who joined Ukraine to Russia. But the alternative could just as be could be just as plausible, which is he's the one that lost Ukraine. And so I think that's kind of the balance right now.
Is there a discussion amongst your colleagues about the possibility that in the sort of using the Ukraine-Russia situation as cover, that China may see an opportunity to escalate aggression with Taiwan? Is that a topic of consideration?
It is. I think there's two reasons why potentially Xi may not, the Chinese premier Xi Jinping may not move on Taiwan right now, which is A, I don't think that China is prepared militarily to invade Taiwan. And my perception is that they don't think that they have enough of a military advantage over the United States in that region. That's my perception. That's how I feel. And then the second is he himself is trying to consolidate political power this year in China with the, I believe it's the Chinese People's Congress that's happening in September or October. And so he's also focused on making sure that he can bring all the elites along to basically rubber stamp his being in office for longer than perhaps any other premier in many years.
A couple of other things, and there's really so much to talk about. In terms of inflation, similarly to gas prices, where certainly a president can do a little bit on some of these issues, but really these are big structural systemic things that are often global in nature. What can be done about inflation? What should be done about inflation?
Well, I think it's a real issue, and you don't have to go further than your grocery store or your gas pump to see that it's a real issue, and anybody who doesn't think so is denying reality. I think there are three things that we as lawmakers and the Biden administration can do to tackle this. First is we have to fight COVID, and we have to make sure that we see a decline in cases here, but also abroad. So, David, in that regard, I'm going to put in a big plug for my legislation and my moves to really get the world vaccinated at this point, not just the United States, because if we see variant after variant come from abroad, including the Delta variant, which killed three of my distant relatives in India, and then the Omicron variant and others come to our shores, it's going to wreak more havoc with our economy and lead to more inflation. So that's the first thing. We have to control COVID here and abroad. The second thing we have to do is, you know, those infrastructure investments, which we approved in the fall, have to be directed at short-term logistical bottlenecks that kind of continue to hamper the supply chain. So just as an example, we should direct as much of that money as possible in the short term to modernizing our ports, to making sure that our rail facilities are modern and capable of handling the surge in goods that's happened now, having pop-up inland ports and so forth. The third thing that we have to do is call a spade and note that some companies are engaging in predatory pricing practices. And on my committee, the House Oversight Subcommittee on Economic and Consumer Policy, which is a mouthful, we launched an investigation into the meat processing industry, where four firms control more than 60% of meat processing and have increased prices by double digits year after year and are seeing net profits go through the roof. And the same thing is happening in other industries. And so if we do those three things, I think it starts to help. But really what we need to do is make sure that we can take the disruptions out of the supply chain. That will be the biggest help at this point.
On to pick a couple of those things, I mean, on vaccinating the world, when you look at a world map right now, we're basically talking about Africa, where there's the serious lack of vaccines. I mean, even if, you know, you look at South America, there's, you know, in Eastern Europe, there's still fewer vaccine doses, but availability is increasing rapidly, really everywhere but Africa, as far as I understand, looking at the map. So is that the area that should be the focus?
I think that has to be among the top places that we direct our efforts. You know, in Africa, it's still, I think, under 20% of the continent of 1.2 billion people are vaccinated. And I bet you, you know, dollars to donuts that the next variant, if it emerges, is going to be from a place like Africa. And what we fear is that the lethality of the next variant could far exceed Omicron and still have its contagiousness. And that's what we have to be really worried about. And I'm concerned that we have a real blind spot here, David, to this issue. And that's why I and Jeff Merkley and others are pushing very hard for the White House to direct more funds, much more funds in this direction, because it's a real, really a modest investment compared to the price that we've paid to repair our economy and our healthcare system in other ways.
So what about domestically at this point? I mean, I have a feeling that due to political reasons, sometime between now and the State of the Union on March 1st, the White House will likely do some sort of a pseudo mission accomplished type transition to the endemic phase statement. And whether that's medically prudent is a question that remains to be seen. But, you know, in Illinois, J.B. Pritzker has said it's going to be time to start winding down mask requirements. We're seeing it happen in California, New York, some places in schools. Does that make sense to you right now based on the data? What are the milestones we should be looking at otherwise?
Is an important question. I think that to some degree, it makes sense to wind down some of these mandates, because at the end of the day, we are seeing a rapid decline in COVID cases. And I think there's a lot of public pressure as well to start to wind down some of those mandates. However, we have to be prudent about that, because especially in schools and other places where a lot of people are yet to be vaccinated or ineligible to be vaccinated, we just have to be cautious. And so I think that striking that balance is extremely important right now. But I think that at the end of the day, we have to stick to the science, David. We can't just wish this pandemic away. We're going to have to be very cautious, because look, we all want to keep the schools open. We all want to keep businesses open. We want the economy to stay open, and we cannot ever go into lockdown. So to prevent that, we have to take these very basic precautions, such as wearing masks, distancing, and so forth.
Okay, last thing I want to talk about. Nancy Pelosi in December said no to a congressional stock trading ban. In January, she said she's open to it, and now she's actually supporting it. Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on the issue, but also the specifics of how such a ban might work, in the sense that a ban on making trades of individual stocks while in office is a very sort of narrow thing, and how this applies to significant others or family members, how this applies to mutual funds and other things? I mean, what would you like to see? What makes sense?
I think what I like to see is my bill become law. It's the Banned Conflicted Trading Act is the main bill that's being discussed right now. It has bicameral bipartisan support, which is unusual for anything these days in Congress. And it's, I think, the subject of negotiations at this point. Basically, what it would do is this, David, which is What we know is that the Stock Act does not work. That is the act which basically requires disclosures of trading of individual stocks and securities, but doesn't prohibit it. What we found is that, according to a recent report, 54 members of Congress violated just those disclosure requirements, but hundreds of others followed those requirements, but have created a tremendous appearance of insider trading. You know, basically people assume that when members of Congress pull out their Ameritrade app and start trading stocks, that they're doing so based on non-public information they gain from classified briefings and hearings and insight into legislation. So the consensus in the grassroots among Democrats and Republicans is the current system does not work. What my bill does is the following. It basically bans or prevents or prohibits members from trading individual stocks and securities, allows them to remain invested and to trade mutual funds and widely diversified funds. It also, if people wish to trade, they can do so through a blind trust. If they wish to keep their stocks, they can, but they can't trade them. They have to hold them for the time that they're in office. And at the end of the day, what we're trying to do, David, is we're trying to restore a little bit of trust back in Congress here. And when every story comes out saying that some member traded, bought Pfizer stock because they got word that Pfizer just developed a vaccine, or sold Pfizer stock when they just got word that the pandemic is actually receding, that just creates the appearance that they're trading on insider information, and it erodes trust further. So we got to bring this to an end.
Now, would this do? Would there be anything in this bill that would prevent Nancy Pelosi from saying to her husband, "Okay, you make these moves because this is what's going on," and would she be in compliance in that situation?
So technically, that would be a violation of the Stock Act if she were to do that. But if this particular bill applies to members and congressional staff, I'm definitely open to spouses being added, perhaps through an amendment to this particular bill. Right now, I just want to see the bill move, because I think we could sit here and basically have a situation where nothing gets done because people want the perfect bill. And really, right now, what we want is a good bill, and we need it fast. And I'm really pleased that the grassroots and public pressure have brought us to this moment, along with mine and my colleagues' fierce advocacy in Congress. But we need reforms right now, David.
Yep, we're going to be watching that bill very, very closely. We've been speaking with Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, who represents the 8th District of Illinois. Really appreciate your time today.
Yes, sir. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, my friends, dozens of you sending me this clip overnight. Of course, I'm going to mention it. Radical Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is very confused. And when she wanted to attack Nancy Pelosi's Gestapo tactics, she referred to gazpacho, the cold Spanish tomato soup. And my reaction was, this woman is such a dumb bisque. I mean, really. Let's take a look at the video. You know, much like Trump flushing documents down the toilet, as we learned about this morning, this is the type of thing where, if it was part of a screenplay, it would get removed because it would just not be believable. Here is Marjorie Taylor Greene herself. Take a listen.
Not only do we have the D.C. jail, which is the D.C. gulag, but now we have Nancy Pelosi's gazpacho police spying on members of Congress. Spying.
Oh, man, if you missed it, here it is one more time.
Which is the D.C. gulag. But now we have Nancy Pelosi's gazpacho police spying on members of.
As Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted, this is what happens when you ban books from your house. This woman has gone completely lentil. I'm sorry. Now I'm getting all soup confused. No, I mean, listen, it's as a reminder, the Gestapo was the German secret police of the Nazis in Third Reich, World War II era Germany. Gazpacho is a vegetable, tomato, cold soup typical in Spain. I like blending a cucumber into it. If people care about gazpacho, that I think you get a really nice, not only taste, but also in terms of the smell. Throwing in one little cucumber, Persian cucumber, maybe, it really helps. But Nancy Pelosi, I can assure you, is not enforcing any soup-related rules here on the floor of the House. And it's beyond. These people are caricatures of, they're caricatures of themselves. If you wanted to ridicule someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene, you couldn't actually come up with something wackier and more absurd than her trying to say these authoritarians with their gazpacho. It's too on the nose. There's no way to actually make it any crazier. And listen, if you hire stupid people to represent you in the House of Representatives, you're going to get stupid gaffes. And that's exactly what we're getting. And she's a joke, and she will almost certainly be reelected. Think about what this means about the people of Georgia who are going to vote for her. They're almost certainly going to reelect her to the House of Representatives. They look at us the world over and they laugh. They point and they laugh, and sometimes they cry when they feel bad for us, if they're in an empathetic mood. Absolutely humiliating. We have another follow-up, by the way, to do. Yesterday, I played for you this incredible video of Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell directly calling the January 6th Trump riots a violent insurrection. This is a very different approach than what the Republican National Committee has said. The Republican National Committee has really danced around actual serious full-throated indictments of what happened on the Trump riots, at the Trump riots, as an attempted coup or a violent insurrection. They've played coy, and they have even censured Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney, two Republicans who have been willing to tell the truth about the Trump riots. Mitch McConnell said it was a violent insurrection, and as expected, Donald Trump has actually lost his mind over this. He's completely triggered. Just as a reminder, here is what Mitch McConnell had to say.
Censure two sitting members of Congress and also use the words legitimate political discourse in talking about January 6th.
Well, let me give you my view of what happened January the 6th. And we're here. We saw what happened. It was a violent insurrection for the purpose of trying to prevent the peaceful transfer of power after a legitimately certified election.
Absolutely, undeniably true. And yet we knew that Donald Trump was not going to like it at the time that we produced yesterday's show. We didn't have a response from Trump. Now we do, and it is as crazy as you can imagine. Donald Trump putting out a statement yesterday saying, quote, Mitch McConnell does not speak for the Republican Party. He kind of does. I mean, in a way, he kind of does. But OK, Mitch McConnell does not speak for the Republican Party and does not represent the views of the vast majority of its voters. That part may be true. Many Republican voters have fallen for the big lie. Trump goes on to say he, Mitch, did nothing to fight for his constituents and stop the most fraudulent election in American history. Now, it's a lie that it was a fraudulent election. And he does nothing to stop the lawless Biden administration, the invasion of our capital B borders, rising capital I inflation, capital U unconstitutional mandates, the persecution of political opponents, fact-finding on the incompetent Afghanistan withdrawal, the giving away our energy independence, etc., which is all because of the fraudulent election. Instead, he bails out the capital R radical left and the rhinos. Now, what Trump is very wrong about here is, while Mitch McConnell correctly called the Trump riots a violent insurrection, Mitch McConnell is actually doing a lot to get in the way of Joe Biden. Mitch McConnell and Republicans are still obstructing so much of what Joe Biden wants to do. So even while Trump is mad that, as he sees it, Mitch McConnell is not interrupting Trump enough, Mitch McConnell is doing what he always does, and that's obstructing. Trump, going back to the statement, Trump going on to say, if Mitch would have fought for the election, it's like, dude, you lost. What can he do? If Mitch would have fought for the election, like the Democrats would have if in the same position, we would not be discussing any of the above today. And our capital C country would be all caps strong and all caps proud instead of weak and embarrassed. exactly what we expected from Donald Trump. And we can only hope. Listen, Joe Biden's approval is not looking good. The House of Representatives for Democrats is not looking great for November. The Senate for Democrats is not. None of it is looking good. If we can seize on anything to try to get mitigated disastrous results in November, it is Republicans fighting like this and hopefully some of them getting so disgusted with this Republican civil war and infighting that they decide to stay home. That's the hope. And of course, we're going to have to wait and see whether that actually happens. Okay, lastly, there is now a very strange situation in the state of Georgia. And as a result, Donald Trump has put out a bizarrely lit, sweaty endorsement video where the background is bright, Trump is dark and glistening and looks confused, and actually opens the statement by saying, "Hello, I'm President Donald Trump." I guess he thinks his name recognition has declined and some people might not know who he is. This is what I'm understand what this video is. Up until a few days ago, Vernon Jones was running against David Perdue for governor of Georgia. So remember, David Perdue was a senator from Georgia. He ultimately lost to John Ossoff in that special election on January 5th of 2021. And then David Perdue said, "I'm going to run for governor." Vernon Jones, also running for governor against David Perdue, drops out a couple days ago and says, "I'm actually going to run for representative for the House of Representatives." It's not because he's a great supporter of David Perdue. It's because he realized he has a much better shot of winning in the House of Representatives than he does at defeating David Perdue for the governorship. So the timing is all bizarre. And Trump says, "Well, this guy's a big supporter of Perdue." Not really. He was actually running against him. And every aspect of this is just strange. The lighting is weird. The delivery is weird. It has a sort of hostage video feel. Let's take a look at that.
"Hello, I'm President Donald Trump. And when it comes to Georgia's 10th congressional district,
right,
I have only one choice. And the man's name is Vernon Jones, a very special person. He's an America First fighter who will never back down to either the establishment or the radical left. Few fought harder for election integrity in 2020 than Vernon. And he's a big supporter of a very good man running for governor, David Perdue. He has my complete and total endorsement. Vernon will not let you down. Let's send a true patriot to Congress."
Okay. So there is Donald Trump, and the lighting is reminiscent of what director of photography Gordon Willis developed for The Godfather. Just all very, very strange. And I just cannot get a straight answer about the timing of any of this. It's all extraordinarily strange. And by the way, the other thing is we're going to see the power of the Trump endorsement. We're really going to see the power of the Trump endorsement at this point. Donald Trump claims to have just a fantastic record as far as endorsements go, and we're actually going to review that record tomorrow. In reality, the record is not really that great. It's very average, and it will be interesting to see what that endorsement record ends up being in November of 2022. That's going to be a big factor in determining whether Trump even runs or has a shot in 2024. Do the Trumpians and Trump-endorsed individuals win in the November midterms, or do they lose? And we'll be watching those results very, very closely. We have a fantastic bonus show today. Remember the bonus show, Attacked by Alex Jones.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Crazy. On today's bonus show, by many economic indicators, the economy is strong, but voters are not feeling that it is strong. And that is another problem for Joe Biden. We're going to talk about that on the bonus show. California is suing Tesla over allegations of discrimination and harassment. We're going to talk about it. And Al Franken, remember Al Franken, senator, Democratic senator from Minnesota? He says it, you know, it would be tempting to run for office again. We're going to talk about the legacy of Al Franken and the circumstances of him ultimately leaving office. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Get instant access by signing up at Join Pac-Man.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music. For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
RCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the Fat Beats in Pittsburgh, right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Slaying Monday night of civil rights leader, father of five, Wallace Jackson.
5 years ago this week, civil rights activist Wallace Jackson Sr. was assassinated in Natchez, Mississippi, where he was the treasurer of the NAACP. No one's ever been charged with the 1967 murder. The FBI reopened, then closed the case without filing charges, despite evidence pointing to the involvement of the inner circle of the local KKK. The stories told in the new documentary, American Reckoning. We'll speak to the film's directors and Wallace Jackson Sr.'s daughter, who's still waiting for justice.
I received this letter in the mail, and it was a slap in the face. I felt like the FBI brought all this attention out to make themselves look good, and, you know, and our families still suffered.
But we first look at the growing calls for Spotify to remove Joe Rogan's podcast from its platform after he promoted misinformation about COVID-19 on his show. And as video resurfaced showing Rogan making repeated racist comments using the N-word over and over again. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The National Archives has asked the Justice Department to investigate Donald Trump's handling of the White House records after officials recovered 15 boxes of materials from Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort that should have been turned over to the federal government. According to the Washington Post, those documents include items that were clearly marked as classified, including several labeled top secret. When the FBI investigated Hillary Clinton in 2016 for possibly mishandling classified information, Trump led chants of lock her up on the campaign trail. It's not clear if the FBI will open a similar probe into Trump's mishandling of documents. Meanwhile, investigators with the House Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection have found gaps in White House logs of Trump's phone calls on the day of the Capitol assault. The gaps span a period of time during the attack when Trump is known to have been making phone calls. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is blasting conservative lawmakers for supporting a convoy of truck drivers protesting COVID restrictions and vaccine mandates. Trudeau spoke from Canadian Parliament as truckers organized a third blockade of a port entry into the United States.
People in Windsor are suffering and losing their jobs because they can't get auto parts across the Ambassador Bridge. People in Alberta are seeing shelves empty because they can't get deliveries across the Coutts border crossing. And this Conservative Party that supports these blockades won't even stand up and say, enough is enough, it's time to go home.
The border protests have forced automakers, including GM, Ford, and Chrysler, to scale back production at plants in Michigan and Ontario. Organizers of the Canadian truckers' protest have been linked to far-right and neo-Nazi movements. The convoys inspired similar protests around the world. Here in the U.S., a Department of Homeland Security memo predicts a convoy of anti-vaccine truckers will block roads in major cities in the coming weeks and could disrupt the Super Bowl Sunday and President Biden's State of the Union address on March 1st. President Biden's urging U.S. citizens in Ukraine to leave immediately, saying he would not send troops to rescue them in the event of a Russian invasion.
that's a world war when Americans and Russians start shooting at one another.
Russia has denied it plans to invade Ukraine,